Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're talking about Badger and Big Ten volleyball to begin our show today. Pete Wade is with us. Pete's color commentator for Badger women's volleyball. He coached the Badgers from 99 to 2012. Pete, welcome.
Hi, thanks, Larry. How are you doing?
I'm doing just great. John Arias with us as well. John's the play-by-play announcer for Badger women's volleyball. He started calling Badger matches in 2008. John, good to have you with us.
Hey, how's it going?
Going pretty darn well. I'm really glad to have you both here. I've listened to you a number of times, and you guys do a great job calling those games. As we listen to John and Pete talk, I hope you'll join in. Are you excited, Badger volleyball fan? Where do you think UW-Madison's program is headed maybe in the next 5 years? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Well, the Wisconsin-Minnesota match recently set the record for the most watched televised match in NCAA volleyball history. I'm going to probably ask you both this. John, why do you think college volleyball is having this big moment?
I think it's probably been building to this for several years, you know, locally, regionally, in places like Madison, in places like Lincoln, Nebraska, other various schools around the Big Ten. There has been, you know, that local support, and I think this is the year it's really starting to spread out, or you're starting to see that become more nationwide and outside of those regional pockets. I think it's for a number of reasons, including one of the biggest things is the game itself is very exciting. There's not a lot of downtime, as Pete can attest, being a color commentator you know, on the radio. There's not a lot of time in between plays, so the action moves, and the action is exciting because you get these rallies between these two teams. You add that on top of big crowds on those television broadcasts, and you're flipping around and you see that and you go, what is this? This is exciting. This only takes 90 minutes to 2 hours, depending on how many sets it goes. And there's a lot of people that are excited about it on the video that I'm watching. And it just is intriguing in that respect.
Yeah. Pete, anything to add to that?
Yeah. When John said it's been building for a few years, I would even go back. It's been building for decades. Actually, back in the 90s when Steve Lowe was the coach here, they won their first Big Ten championship, and they actually filled the field house with, I think it was like 11,000 people, which they don't even allow anymore because of fire codes and restrictions like that. But it's been building the whole time. And as coaches across the country, volleyball coaches, we've been following the improvement and building of numbers of athletes playing the game. And it's just been one of the fastest growing sports for young athletes, both boys and girls. And now it's building to the college level where here we are 30 years later, and it just continued to build the whole time. We also, I think it was 2007, maybe we had, against Penn State, we had, I think, 10,300 in there. So that was huge. Now they're selling out at 7,229, I think. But it's just a great environment. They've improved the field house, exciting athletes, great training. And so it's just a lot of fun to watch. So it's just exploding across the country, like John said.
Amanda Middleton has something to add right now. Let's go there. Amanda, hi.
Hi. Hi, I just wanted to call in. I listen to you guys every Badger game, and I just love your commentary. I'm a delivery driver on the west side of Madison, and I get so excited listening to the coverage. And when people, I tell people how I listen on the radio, at first they're kind of confused how that works. But when they listen with me, they get just as thrilled as I do. And they're like, wow, that really was exciting. I've been a loyal listener since probably 2015 during the Lauren Carlini era, I'd say. And yeah, every year you guys are just so amazing. And the Badgers just get better and better every year. And sometimes when people are a little bit sad about the football team, I'm kind of that jerk who says, well, if you want to follow, you know, consistent winners, you should follow the volleyball team because they've been amazing for so many years.
Amanda, thanks a lot for calling. Comment, Pete?
Well, yeah, definitely. Thanks for listening, Amanda. And I think it's been fun between John and myself. And when John started, he didn't know a whole lot about the sport, which was fun for me as the coach at the time to help him learn the sport. But then, man, as he taken off, he is so good at that play-by-play and calling it as it's happening, fast action. You know, he's got the names of the opponents and the Badgers. And then the ball hits the ground, and I fill in the blanks and kind of re-explain what just happened or if I notice something different happening on the court. So we've heard of a lot of people who are actually watching it on TV but turning down the sound and trying to sync our call with the TV, and they prefer that to some of the other commentators they've been listening to.
Well, I prefer that as well. John does a marvelous job on the play-by-play. I just kudos to you, John. How is it working with Pete?
Well, thank you for that, and thanks for listening as well, making deliveries around the West Side. You know, if you hit me up on X or Twitter, we can give you a listener shout out next time, or maybe we should just write it down and give you a listener shout out now. How's it working with Pete? It's great, because quite honestly, I think the color commentary announcer in these broadcasts, you know, I may be good right now naming names and telling locations on the court and being excited about it. But I think Pete and Diane Nordstrom, who I've done road matches with for several years, Jessica Williams, who's also filled in for radio, I think that second voice helps clarify a lot of the volleyball terms and everything else that just occurred. Like, it's got a smart spin to it. So I love working with Pete, because he knows exactly what he's talking about. He's been there, you know? So I think his insight is very valuable to the broadcast.
Amanda, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Steve from Stevens Point called but couldn't stay with us. He's wondering why the Badgers are fourth in the RPI rankings when they're second in the nation.
I guess I'll take that one. Second in the nation is a coaches poll. That's what they're, you know, and it's an opinion poll. So the coaches are looking at all the results across the country. But the RPI is a computerized system looking at all the wins and losses your opponent's wins and losses. So it doesn't matter too much. The RPI is actually what they'll go by as far as the selection committee, not so much the coaches poll when it comes down to NCAA tournament time.
Well,
yeah, if I could just chime in there real quick. Yeah, it's exactly. The RPI is a combination of a lot of different analytics and statistics, and then they churn out who's the best team, or quote unquote the best team. But like Pete said, the poll is just an opinion of what the coaches feel are the best teams in the nation. So I think bottom line, it all comes down to, yes, those things are important, especially with getting home court advantage in the NCAA tournament. You want to be a top four seed, but after that, it's, you know, you can be number four or number 40 as long as you win. That's the only thing that's important.
John Arias and Pete Wade, our guests today, as we talk Badger women's volleyball and volleyball in general. Comments about the sport or the Badgers, I hope you'll join in. 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. I have to mention the Nebraska-Omaha match, which set a record for the largest crowd to watch a women's sporting event in the U.S. That was absolutely flabbergasting to me. And Kelly Sheffield, even though they have a kind of a rivalry, he and John Cook as getting the biggest crowds and all that, he was all for it and really liked it.
Yeah.
It was an amazing match. I think they were very lucky that everything worked out weather-wise, because they had a plan B, and I think it was to go into an indoor facility, but then there would have been a lot of people left out of that. So they got very lucky, but an amazing event that caught the attention of the nation also again. And the state, I mean, that state is crazy for volleyball. There's no doubt about that.
I think go ahead, John.
I was going to say, I think it's great for the sport. And I think that's what Kelly is kind of coming through is that he feels it's great for the sport too. I think he told me, like, if we weren't playing, I'd be there. You know, I want to go witness something like that. So yes, it's awesome for Nebraska, but I also think it obviously puts a big highlight on the sport itself.
You know, just thinking about fans, the State Journal had a nice little piece, I thought. They had spoke to a handful of Badger super fans who wait outside the field house hours before a game in order to get their favorite seat or seats. For anyone who's never been to a game in the field house, which a heck of an experience, describe the atmosphere. What kind of atmosphere, what goes on, and what kind of atmosphere do Badger fans create? John, start with you and then go to Pete.
Well, I think it's one of the best atmospheres in college volleyball. I think Nebraska and Wisconsin right up there, 1 and 2, with just excitement. So everybody's into the match. The student section has continually been, you know, a staple of that crowd. And I really think sometimes they can set the tone for the building as well on just how rowdy you want to be. There's the line that forms beforehand with the kids down on the court, and the players, you know, get to give them high fives. And that's been a tradition. I know Pete can probably speak a little bit more to that as well, but the atmosphere is really second to none in the sport of college volleyball. And so if you're able to get out to a match, if you've been fortunate enough, and I know I've had a lot of people asking me about the Black Friday match when Nebraska comes to town. I don't know how many people are going to be able to sneak into that one because it's going to cost you a few $100, but it's a fantastic family friendly environment. It's great.
Yeah. Pete, any comment?
Absolutely. I totally agree with John. And, you know, it started, I got there in 99, and it was with Steve Lowe in 1990, where he really got things going. And what John mentioned is during introductions of the Badgers, kids are allowed to line the court and get their hands slapped by the Badgers as they run by. And that started with what they called the Bumpin' Badgers, a kids club, way back in 1990. And it's been going on ever since. And actually, there's a rule in the sport that you can't extend past your the nets, basically, and you can't go into the other opponent's side for things like that. Otherwise, they'd wrap around the entire court because they're sometimes 3 and 4 deep with those kids wanting to slap the Badgers' hands. So the kids are just, I should say, the athletes are such great role models for the kids. But those people you mentioned sitting outside waiting for seats, there are certain sections of general admission seats that they've been sitting in, again, for 25, 30 years. And they literally will sit there for sometimes 3 to 4 hours ahead of time to be the first ones in the door. And if you're inside the field house like we are, we're up in the second level watching them run across the field house to get to their seats on the north end because they really like those end line seats. It's really a great view to watch volleyball. You see the ball floating side to side. You see the blocking situations. You see a lot of things. But they've got their favorite seats, and especially the people in the first 3 or 4 or 5 rows. They have been there a long, long time, but it's a great building because it's very upright. So you feel like even if you're in the second level, you're kind of close to the court, where the Kohl Center is a little more laid out wide. This is straight up and down. So it gets rocking in there, that's for sure.
Yeah. I was trying to think back. I was trying to remember my history, but there was one point, I think, where the volleyball team was offered. Maybe it was back when the Kohl Center went in. To have its choice, would you want to try and play, you know, in the Kohl Center, or would you rather have the field house? And whoever was coaching at the time said, "I want the field house."
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that happened because the Kohl Center opened in '98, and I got there in '99. But I think the fact of even sharing practice courts got complicated when they were in the field house because you had men's and women's basketball and volleyball sharing court time for practices. So they were just bumping elbows all the time with locker room space, court time, things like that. So once the basketball programs went to the Kohl Center, volleyball was thrilled to have that facility on their own. And it was old and it needed some updating, but they had it to themselves for practices and competitions. And again, filling the Kohl Center is much tougher because it holds a lot more people. It's like hockey going from the Coliseum to the Kohl Center. It's harder to fill than it used to be. So I think volleyball is thrilled to stay where they are.
We're going to go to Jack and Madison in just a second, but just a reminder, you can join in with your questions as well. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert's our producer today. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking volleyball on the program today, and in particular Badger volleyball, with our two guests, John Arias, play-by-play announcer for the Badger women's team, and Pete Waite, color commentator for the Badger women's volleyball team. Jack and Madison, will give you a chance. Thanks for joining in.
Well, thank you for having me, Larry. Yeah, I guess so. To get into my story, I've been going to the volleyball game since I was real little, and so I'm going to share a couple of stories about that. The first one is when my grandma took my sister and me. I was like 6 or 7 years old. My parents were out on a Friday night. And I remember like enjoying, you know, seeing Bucky play and sort of how well the team was doing then. But the atmosphere was just so loud and raucous, and my 6-year-old ears couldn't handle it. But then fast forward some, I guess it would be 8 or so years, Buddy and I had season tickets to the games, and we would pal around in the student section. And so here were these two crazy middle school boys rocking the atmosphere going. And I don't know, I guess just like, wonder how much the team has improved or how much the game day experience has really stepped up in the days since I saw the games as a kid in the 2000s.
Hmm. Well, I'll get both of you in there. John, well, you want to start?
Well, I think one of the game day experiences that's changed the most, and I don't know how you feel about this, Pete, is just adding a video scoreboard. I mean, that changes the way you kind of produce the event if you're on the marketing side of things. I mean, you can show so many more videos, get to know the players, those types of things. From that aspect, I think the video board has made a really positive impact because you feel like you're at any other event. Sporting event where you can scan the crowd and everybody goes crazy when they're on the crowd. I know the handshake line is another big part of that atmosphere. Would you agree with the video board part of that, Pete?
Absolutely. That's the biggest change. People love, like you say, seeing and watching the stories about the Badgers or just goofy things they do during timeouts. They'll show us some things. I mean, the Fieldhouse has great traditions, but that's a new one that people love seeing themselves on the video board. Just that's the funniest thing, you know. They'll scan the crowd and find different people, and they love doing that. So that's when there's ever a break in the action, which there isn't much. When there's a break, they can watch the video board, and that's been a huge change because we just had a scoreboard up there. That's all we had. So I would agree with John.
So what about the team itself? How has the team progressed or changed in your mind over the years? Pete, you want to take a crack at that?
Yeah, the athletes just keep getting more athletic and bigger. I mean, they're just supersized these days. And I look back to decades ago with Title IX when there were women were allowed to be in sports. Then they started meeting the guys who were in sports, and some of them were tall athletes and great athletes. And now their kids are coming around, and it's amazing the size. I mean, the front line for the Badgers, 6'4", 6'7", 6'9", and that's on a 7-foot, 4-inch net, which is, they're just getting so high over that net. It's so intimidating for opponents. And the Badgers have got a crop of them that really a lot of teams across the country don't have players that big. But then you also look, the great thing about the sport is you've got the smaller athletes and people watch the defensive play. And that's another thing that made the game exciting is when the libero came in, you know, the position that just plays defense. That's all they can do. They can't go in the front row. They're in a different color uniform. They stand out. But all the defenders are making some amazingly athletic plays. So, I think things go in phases also as far as from years to year and decade to decade. But it just keeps improving, and they keep getting better and better and better.
Well, to me, I'm just awestruck at how these women can dive and keep a ball in play, keep it off the floor. It's astounding to me sometimes.
I totally agree. I mean, it's a lot of training, and these kids, the athletes, have been playing since some of them fourth, fifth, sixth grade. I think Lauren Carlini, you mentioned, she started at 5 years old playing organized volleyball, being trained. And now she is on the Olympic team and she'll be in Paris. You know, so that's been fun to follow her progress. But you're right. I mean, athletically, they amaze us. And sometimes I'll make a noise while John's talking still just because I saw it. It's like, oh, my gosh. It's like, oh, you know, I can't stop myself because I'm seeing things like I haven't seen these things before. Or I just respect them so much for the moves they're making and the balls they're keeping in play. And the crowd loves it, too, especially if a defender shanks it way off the court. Somebody has to chase it down, bring it back, and then they win that rally. Nothing better for the crowd.
For sure. Coach Kelly Sheffield talks about strong defense. And there's Wisconsin's especially strong at the net. I think it was it Nebraska? They had 12 blocks in one set.
Yeah.
Well, then also, wasn't it John 17 and three sets was a record? Wasn't that they just had the other day? Yeah, it's crazy good. And defense, like you said, starts at the net. But when you have a big block, it's much easier for the defenders behind the block to cover what's left of the court that the attackers can even see or, you know, get to. Or the attackers have to hit over a big block or around it, and they're able to channel it to certain defenders. So that's how the front row and the back row work together.
Yeah, I think there was a comment in the newspaper about one of the defenders during that time said, we hardly had anything to do for that set.
Good point.
That was really amazing, Larry, by the way. I've never seen 12 blocks in a set. When that was, they basically got half of their points from defense at the net. I've never seen anything as crazy as that. And like Pete said as well, 17 blocks in the last match is a school record for just three sets. So yeah, that size really does help them up front. And you talked about, Larry, how amazed you are at some of the diving plays. Absolutely. It's the athleticism is there on those back row players. But I also am amazed at the touch of some of these players and how high they can also leap into the air. And, you know, with someone like Anna Smrek, who's a junior and she's 6'9", obviously she has an advantage with that height, but she can touch over 11, I think it's 11 feet, 4 inches. She can dunk a basketball. Like I'm equally as impressed at just how high these athletes can jump too.
Yeah, it is absolutely amazing. We got an email. Somebody's wondering, how far can a player reach over the top of the net when they're blocking? When is reaching over the net considered interfering with the other team's play?
Yeah, actually, I was going to bring that up. So you've got the plane of the net, basically. Anything above the net, the plane of the net, we call that. Blockers can reach across that as far as they want. So as long as they don't touch the ball before the attacker has a chance to contact the ball. They can be, and some of these kids are getting up to their armpits over the net with their heads over the net, pressing a foot and a half to the other team's side of the net, as long as they're not touching the ball. Sometimes where it gets a little dicey is when the setter is at the net and they're trying to set the ball and a player reaches over the top. They'll call that on the blocker and they can't do that. But otherwise, they can reach far across and get into the space of the attacker, which is really stressful for those attackers.
Yeah, I would think so. I wouldn't want to be on the other side, that's for sure. Well, another rule violation is the double touch. When do refs call double touches?
John, you want to take that?
I was going to say, this is perfect for Pete, and it's usually with Scotty.
Yeah, I can do that. Double contact, basically. Over the years, and this has changed over the decades, in the 90s, early 2000s, if you could see basically the ball spin or the hands were double contact on anybody, they would call it. But I think it was in the early 2000s where the college coaches actually said, and they were doing this intentionally to make the game better to watch on TV and in person, is they didn't want as many whistles being blown. So what they said was if a setter is making an athletic move to the ball and they, what we would say, chuck the ball and, you know, double contact, they want the refs to let it go. So that's a judgment call on the official's part. So now it's sometimes you'll see people who have been watching this game for 30 years and they see a setter do that and they'll moan and groan because they think it's a double contact. But really the coaches have said, hey, just let it go. We don't want to stop the play. Let it, you know, let the action continue. But then when it also changes, what is when a non-setter sets the ball, it seems like the officials then are calling them on the double contacts. They don't give them as much leeway. So it is definitely judgment calls, but it was intentional by the coaches to continue play and just have more action going on.
Let's talk a bit about some of the standout players. And John mentioned one of them, Anna Smrek, but what about centers MJ Hamill and Izzy Ashburn? They're seniors. How are these setters affecting the offense?
Well, I think, and Pete can kind of get into a little bit more of why they're using two setters or how they're using two setters, because not everybody obviously uses two setters. Most of the time in a standard kind of run offense, you'll have one setter leading the attack. But I think with this 6-2 offense that the Badgers are running, they use two. And I think that these setters have such a unique opportunity in front of them that they have so many talented attackers around them that can compensate sometimes for, a bad pass that maybe has a setter on the run and not setting her hitters as well as she'd want to. They have somebody like Sarah Franklin who out of system and when the Badgers aren't, I'm saying a lot of volleyball terms, when they're out of system and the Badgers are kind of scrambling, I guess you could say, is one way to identify out of system. Everybody's kind of running around. It's not the setter just waiting at the net. Somebody like Sarah Franklin, they don't have to be perfect with their sets because she's so dynamic with her range of attacks. Or 6'9", you throw it up there and you have a little bit of a leeway as to where the ball can be because you just let your hitter go get it. So I think they're running a very talented offense, and they're doing it to the point that they're one of the best offensive teams in the nation. So they're lucky, or very fortunate rather, to just have all that talent around them where they don't always have to be pinpoint precise to get a kill this year.
But they also, they're sort of quarterbacking in a way, are they not, John? I mean, they're deciding how to set or who to set to.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of that, too, dictates as to where that first contact came from. So if you're in serve, receive, you're waiting for the serve, and the pass is all the way off to the right, well, they don't have as many options. But, yeah, they're leading. They're making the decisions that affect who touches the ball, for sure.
I'm wondering about the transfer portal. And, Sarah Franklin, didn't she come from Michigan State? I think she came from, and there are some others as well. And it's been a boon to Wisconsin. But what do you think about the transfer portal, Pete, from your perspective as a former coach?
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't have to deal with it. Although in Wisconsin's case now, the Badgers are doing very well. They've got 4 or 5 kids who have come from other Big Ten programs. And in the past, way back in the past, if you transferred from a Big Ten school to another Big Ten school, you would lose your scholarship and you'd have to sit out a year. So that was a real hindrance for kids moving around. Now they can leave anytime and go somewhere else. So somebody like Sarah was the one stud that Michigan State had. And she said, hey, I don't want to lose this many times. I want to play on a better team. So she wanted to be more challenged. So she came to Wisconsin. So it's been very good. So really, Nebraska, Wisconsin, the top teams are getting players from other programs who are the one or two studs that those teams have, and they're coming to the top programs because they want to win championships. So it's been very good for the Badgers.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Sarah Franklin's a kind of an interesting story in and of herself because of her health condition that she had to overcome, John.
Yeah, I mean, it was very dicey for her this summer when she had some blood clotting issues, and at one point, doctors said, hey, we don't know exactly what's going on, but this could affect not this season, but the rest of your career. You may not be able to play volleyball. So it was a very emotional time. She was not able to attend the overseas trip to Europe that the team took this summer. It's, big team bonding moment for them and things like that. Get a little extra practice in, but eventually the doctor said, you know what, you're good to go. You can play this year. And she has not looked back since, just being the leading attacker for this team. And her, she was on a roll here before the last match where she's really special to watch, like just unstoppable. Good luck even trying to stop her on the outside. But yeah, so she had a scare that, you know, could have gone a different route, and who knows. But thankfully, it went the route where she's able to keep playing.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's probably in line or at least in the running for Big Ten Player of the Year. What do you think about who are most likely to win awards like that from the team this year, do you think? Or would you speculate?
Well, I'll just say Wisconsin's so balanced. I think if you asked about Player of the Year maybe a month and a half ago or so, I'm not sure how much Sarah Franklin's name would have been mentioned. Obviously, I think she would have because they're one of the best teams. So that usually goes to someone who just has outstanding offensive numbers, if you just want to generalize it, on a good team, right? And I thought that Wisconsin was so balanced to begin, and they still are balanced, not that they're not anymore, that maybe her attempts, her kills per set, weren't going to match some of the other players who might be more of a go-to player on their system. Maybe their team isn't as balanced. But the streak that she was on, Larry, I think definitely has propelled her well into that conversation for Player of the Year just because how valuable she has been to Wisconsin's success.
Yeah. What about freshmen? Let's take freshman of the year. Is there anybody on the Wisconsin team that might even be in the running for that?
No, they don't have any. The only freshman they have is Sage Damro, and you know, she's been dealing with some injuries. She's been down the court a little bit. Yeah, so no freshman of the year, but definitely player of the year, and I would think coach of the year are up there as well. It's really a lot of these awards are probably going to be fought between Wisconsin and Nebraska, to be quite honest.
Yeah. Yeah, John Cook will definitely have some consideration for Coach of the Year. I suppose it'll depend a lot on the – when do those votes take place anyway? Is it before the national championship? I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you get most of those right at the end of the season, right as the tournament is beginning. So you'll kind of get a lot of those awards in that first weekend of the NCAA tournament. You'll find out all the Big Ten accolades then.
So the Badgers are going to play Nebraska on November 24th. You guys looking forward to that match?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a ton. It could determine whether or not Wisconsin gets a fifth straight Big Ten championship.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to lose to anybody else. I'm hoping and thinking that, it was so close that first game that it was unbelievable. And I think there were just a few touches, nets. I think there were like three of them in that fifth set that kind of did Wisconsin in and away. But Pete, what do you think?
It's going to be a battle. We're looking forward to it. Again, there's, I think, four matches, John? You away matches, and not easy ones. You've got at Penn State and at Purdue are two of the toughest ones in the conference. They've got to get by and can't look past. But it will be a battle when they come to town. And, you know, you talk about freshmen in the year. Nebraska's actually got three freshman starters out there who are phenomenal. So they'll likely, one of those, especially maybe their setter, will get that one. But Franklin, she could get Player of the Year. She could get National Player of the Year. You know, but all of John's points were right about a balanced team, and those are the ones who win championships, don't always have the best stats because they're all balanced in so many ways. So it's going to be a battle when Nebraska comes to town the next time, for sure.
Yeah, and real quick on that Nebraska matchup, like Pete makes a great point. You have to go to Penn State. Penn State just almost knocked off Nebraska last week, you know, at Rec Hall at Penn State. So that's obviously, and it's the place that Wisconsin historically really hasn't even won a lot of matches because Penn State's just been such a dominant team for so many years. So that's tough. Purdue's always tough as well. Heck, Maryland already sold out their match for Friday night, and that's a smaller gym, but man, it's loud. The audio bounces all over that place, and the fans screaming, and it's a really loud place to play. I think about 1,500, 1,600, if I remember correctly. Could be a little bit more than that. But if Nebraska and Wisconsin win out, you are headed for a Big Ten Network showdown Black Friday at 3 p.m. at the Fieldhouse, and it could come down to lose. Nebraska is your Big Ten champions. Win, you at least claim a share, because you should be able to take care of Iowa the next, the final match to wrap up the season. So everything as far as the conference run could come down to that Friday match.
Well, it's really something to look forward to. I get so worked up if I have the TV on, I have to turn away from the TV sometimes. And I have friends who say the same thing. You just get too much of an overload. So, and it's nice to be able to have you guys on and in the video at this the same time, because it really helps. And John, let me give you one final. I know we've got to go away here, but you also call women's basketball, and you do it on your own a lot. And how you are, and I have long admired your ability to call those games, and a lot of times you're calling the games on your own, and to be able to not have a Pete, and to be able to carry a game and do it as well as you do, you deserve a lot of praise. And you both, well, go ahead, John.
I was going to say thanks, and I think a lot of that, too, is just the sports themselves. Basketball, not as quick as volleyball, but it's a lot quicker than if you're doing a baseball game. So I feel like it's maybe, as a broadcaster, a little easier to fill than if you had to call nine innings of something.
Well, the two of you do an outstanding job, and good luck the rest of the way. We'll be listening, and go Badgers. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
John Arias is the play-by-play announcer for Badger Women's Volleyball. Pete Waite, the color commentator for Badger Women's Volleyball. It's really fun for me, as someone who's listened to them many times, to be able to have a chance to talk to them kind of in person and get some feedback and learn a little bit about what they think about Badger play and how they work together. So it's a lot of fun for me.